Welcome to Target 24/7, a UNC basketball podcast. Make sure to like, share, and subscribe to the channel. I want to welcome in CBS Sports analyst and bracketologist, Mr. Dave Cobb. I'm going to call you Cobb because that's what they call you. So I'm going to call you Cobb. So, you know, welcome. Tell us kind of how things are going, being a bracketologist. Maybe what's the difference between this year and last year, the biggest difference as a bracketologist?
Yeah, what's up, John? Great to be on with you. Happy to be called Cobb. That's what my close friends call me. So we can be close friends now that we're colleagues here in the CBS Sports realm. Basically what we're doing this year, we've got an advanced model that's doing the bracketology for us, which allows us to do a fresh bracket every single day.
AI? So, is it AI?
Well, no, that's a scary word, man. There was a real humans, including myself, who helped feed this thing the information that it's using. I mean, there was some AI, like AI helped us as well, right? Because there's, I mean, strands upon strands upon strands of code, you know, that go into building something like this. And that's all far beyond my realm of expertise. But suffice it to say, we've got this thing pretty dialed in because when they did the mock preview, or not the mock, but the bracket preview this past Saturday, our model had 15 of the 16 teams, and the only one that we missed was Texas Tech, because the model had already gone ahead and docked Texas Tech a little bit for the JT Toppin injury, whereas the real committee, they docked Texas Tech a little bit, but not a lot. So anyway, that's a long way of saying we're doing it a little differently in the bracketology world this year at CBS Sports, and my role in all of it is just to write about a lot of what the model is saying. And then we give feedback, we review it, like we look at it and say, I wonder if it's maybe getting this wrong or this right or whatever the case may be. But as you know, man, there's 1,000 metrics that go into it. Really, there's 7 that are on those team sheet metrics. And so if you really dial in on those, they can be your guiding light. And we know that wins above bubble in particular is
really I was good. Going to ask you that. I swear, literally in my mind, I'm going to ask, because as much as I am into this college basketball thing, can you break it down in lamest terms, wins above bubble?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's basically like judging what you've done against your schedule as opposed to what the average bubble team would do against your schedule.
Okay.
So what it does is it allows the selection committee to compare Auburn, which now has, I think, 13 losses, side by side, head to head with Miami of Ohio, which is undefeated. Well, we know Auburn's played maybe the most difficult schedule in college basketball. Miami of Ohio has played probably one of the easiest schedules in college basketball. Okay, what if we get in a situation where those are the last two teams on the board for at-large consideration? How in the world do we compare to them, right? Well, wins above bubble allows you to do that. And the way it does it is it kind of gives you a little score for each game. I'll give you an example. If North Carolina, like, so the best score you can get for a game would be between 0 and 1. All right, let's say you beat the University of Maryland Eastern Shore at home in November. You're going to get like 0.01 for that. You're not going to get anything for it. That's like a sub-300 team in the net on your floor. You're not going to get any reward for that. If you lose it, you're going to get hammered. So like TCU, they lost at home to New Orleans to open the season. And that might hurt them. Might hurt them when come Selection Sunday. But to close the season, man, UNC at Duke. If UNC wins that game, they will get almost a full point in wins above bubble, which is as good as you can do. And what that means is, like, if you get 0.97, that is a reflection of the fact that the average bubble team would go to Duke and win that game maybe 3% of the time. So you get 0.97 for winning it. And I'll say the last thing, because you can go on forever on this.
This is so good. I literally like wins above bubble. What's going on?
So if North Carolina loses at Duke, they lose at Cameron Indoor. Okay, so what? They're going to lose like 0.05 or something in wins above bubble, or 0.03, because the average bubble team would lose that game 95-97% of the time.
Okay.
So there you go. I know some folks out there get sick of all the alphabet soup, but I like this one. I actually think this is a really good metric.
Well, they say that that's the reason this Carolina team got in a couple of years ago, I believe. Or was it last year? Was it last year? Last year, the wins above bubble, they had some big time wins. So leading into this is the Tar Heel Park podcast. So let's recap the Louisville win and what it means for seeding. I was thoroughly impressed by Seth Trimble getting 30. They're undefeated at home. Longest win streak since 2016, 2017. 6-6 against Quad One you know, in quad one play, 16-0 against quads 2-4. What does this mean in the bracketology world?
Yeah, no doubt. It's a huge win. Yeah. Like, you keep waiting for the bottom to fall out, you know, without Caleb Wilson, right?
Yeah.
And of course, you had that NC State situation. Like, that wasn't pretty. But all in all, you're sitting here at 3-1 without your leading scorer, your leading rebounder, a guy who blocks a lot of shots, gets a lot of steals. I mean, obviously, I don't need to tell your listeners how important Caleb Wilson is. Mm-hmm. And the fact that, that UNC went out and more or less dominated Louisville. Obviously, Louisville closed within a possession there late, but still, I mean, super impressive win. So when I look at UNC's resume, the thing that stands out is the quality of their best wins. So that this we were at that mock selection exercise in Indianapolis a week or so ago, and one thing they kept honing in on and coming back to was who are your best victories against. And the crazy thing is, beating Louisville isn't even one of the best three victories this season for North Carolina, because you've got the road win over Virginia, you've got the win over Kansas, and I mean, you went to Rupp, and not to mention you beat Duke. I mean, you got four wins right there that are actually all probably better than beating Louisville at home. But it's great, man, because what it does is it puts a pretty high ceiling on what UNC could accomplish. I mean, I think you could see them. Yeah, you know, we have them as a six today, which is kind of splitting the difference, right? But if you went strictly off a resume and took KenPom all the way out of it and just said resume, like, you could make the case this team could be as high as a four seed today.
Yeah, you know, some big time wins, you know, kind of impressive wins. And, you know, I talked about this on the pod probably a couple of weeks ago. I mean, some of UNC's best lineups don't even involve Caleb Wilson, and it's starting to show a little bit. And then, you know, what the analytics kind of said on paper, which is why you don't always look at paper, was Zayden High was a guy that was going to be maybe a negative point, but he's actually brought like some a little bit of an edge to these guys. So it's do you guys also do the eye test? Like, look, I'm watching this team, right? This is like, put the papers away. This is not a six seed, or is this not a four seed? Or how much does the eye test equate into what you guys kind of do?
Yeah, not a ton for the CBS Sports bracketology purposes, but I mean, I'll just tell you on a personal level, like seeing Seth Trimble go for 30 the other night, like when I go to fill out my bracket, man, that was a great reminder that like, oh yeah, man, like Seth Trimble's a dog. Like he can go out and put a team on his back if need be. So I'll certainly internalize that information when I'm filling out my own bracket. Yeah. But for the purposes of the model, probably not going to take a whole lot of that eye test in. Now we do know the committee is formed of humans, right? Like the committee is not a model. Like it's actual humans. They are guided by metrics, and we can use past precedents and stuff to predict what they're going to do, which is basically what we're doing. But the eye test does to some extent have an influence on the way they're going to think. You know, as much as they try to stick to the metrics and stick to the facts and stick to what's on paper, if you're looking the part, but here's where I would say that is factored in, that's going to show up in your predictive metrics. Like if you're crushing folks and you're really, you know, firing on all cylinders, that's going to be reflected at KenPom. That's going to be reflected at Torvik, and so that will sort of get factored in, because the wins above bubble, the strength of record, that's all just win-loss. Doesn't matter at all how much you win by. It doesn't matter at all if you ran up the score late. It's just, did you win? Where'd you play? Okay, great. And then your KenPom, your Torvik, and you know, and those are some of the metrics that can be more about seeding and whatnot. And they will factor in, like, all right, let's say, for example, I mean, UNC got it by 16 at one point in the second half of that game against Louisville. Seth Trimble had that breakaway dunk, throws it down. I mean, they look like they might win that thing by 20. Yeah. If they win that thing by 20, they might be 3 to 4 spots higher at KenPom today, which who knows? Like if you're looking at teams side by side in the committee room and they're really close, like that would make a difference. Now in the end, Louisville came back and it made it tight in the end. So that's sort of where you get the quote eye test show up, I guess, would be within the predictive metrics.
Yeah, it's so crazy because basketball is just such it's hard to explain, man. Like I've had games where, you know, like I saw Virginia Tech against NC State, right, at NC State. And NC State kind of, for better or worse, kind of took it to them. Didn't blow them out, but I've never felt like NC State was in trouble. And then, you know, if you would have told me, hey, they're going to Clemson and they're 8-point dogs and they're going to win outright, you know, I would have told you you're insane, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, it's so hard to just, I mean, with all the numbers, that's why March Madness is so much fun. I can't really explain it. Like, even last night, I did a New Mexico Nevada game. Nevada's finally healthy. New Mexico is coming in. Their last four in on the bracketology. They're probably out today because they of the are. Loss. Exactly. And Nevada, if Nevada doesn't lose to San Jose State and they have one more bad loss, I think they're flipped. They're only like, so like, it's that minimal for teams, man. So I don't envy your position.
No, especially this time of year. And that's where it's like, hey, somebody gets mad. Hey, this is what the model said, man. This is the model, man. You ain't mad at me. You're mad at the model. You know, but I do think it's doing a great job of interpreting the bubble, right? Like the bubble is so sensitive right now. Even though you've got 25 plus results for most of these teams, even the slightest nudge in one direction or the other can have a big impact on where you stand. And the crazy thing, too, is the way things reverberate throughout the picture. Like, I'll give you one example, not necessarily UNC related, but last night, Northwestern gets a big road win over Indiana. Well, in the process, they rise 10 spots in the net. Well, now all of a sudden, Ohio State's December victory at Northwestern has flipped from a quad two to a quad one. Like, what in the world? Ohio State didn't even play. So the thing that I like about, like, wins above bubble is it's not going to overreact to a game arbitrarily flipping quadrants, right? So, sure, Ohio State's resume looks a little better today because now they have a quad one win, technically. But if you look at Wob, like, Wob's not going to go nuts and send them soaring up the ranks just because Northwestern went from being 12-16 to 13-16 or whatever the case may be. So, yeah, man, it's crazy sensitive around that bubble right now. I mean, the number one seeds, they look like they're, you know, pretty close to being cemented, but the bubble picture remains chaotic.
Yeah, I'm kind of looking at this. So I see Santa Clara's moved in to the mix. So super interesting. So crystal ball, right? Carolina to get – I don't know if they can get to the 3-seed line unless they run through the ACC tournament, but I think they could go for, hypothetically speaking, what would they have to do finishing the season to hit that 4-seed line?
Well, so it's funny you mentioned 3-seed, you mentioned 4-seed. Like, I would say the absolute ceiling, slim chance, but absolute ceiling is 3-seed. That would involve winning at Cameron Indoor. That would involve running the table in the ACC tournament. Hey, you never know, right? If Caleb Wilson comes back healthy, crazier things have happened. So that would be the absolute ceiling. But the interesting thing is I would actually say the floor is like an 8-seed. So that's a wide level of variance for a team less than 3 weeks out from Selection Sunday. And the only reason I suggest that floor is, look at this, man. You've got two games now coming up against Virginia Tech and Clemson. These teams are desperate. They are desperate.
And they're good.
Yeah. And they're coming to your place. If they beat you on your floor, it's going to cost you a little bit in some of these metrics, right? Like, your wins above bubble is going to take a little bit of a hit if you lose at home to Virginia Tech. So, and those teams are on the bubble. Like, Virginia Tech's on the wrong side, Clemson's on the right side, but they're sliding. And so that's where it's like, man, like, you got to be on your game. And if Caleb's not back until Duke, right, like, the margin for error is slim, and those teams are capable.
Yeah, I tell you, you do not want to be an 8-seed. I think because let me tell you, we were number one seed. The 8-seed, you play the number one team the next game, the next game, and that's just not the position you want to be in. And that number one seed's probably going to be home at some form of, you know, we played in Charlotte, but I will say this, that was the toughest game. When we were number two seed, then we played a 7-seed, and then we played Washington 1 year. That was the toughest game of the tournament for us. I mean, we lost to Kentucky, but you understand in Elite Eight, but that, you understand where you're at, right? One game before the Final Four, it's going to be a dogfight. You're not thinking like second game of the first weekend. It's so Carolina, I wouldn't want to. They've got something to play for.
Hey, if I'm a 1-seed and somehow, some way, Carolina ends up back on the 8-line, heck no, man. I don't want to play North Carolina in a 1-8 matchup. That would be that would be horrible, especially because by that point, Caleb Wilson would be back fully. You know, hopefully fully ready to go. And we've seen again, man, what North Carolina is capable of, because there just aren't a lot of teams out there in their seed range that have that number of high quality victories. And that's why I think, you know, 7-8 highly unlikely. We've got them as a 6 now. And John, we also have a projection tool, and our projection tool suggests they will end up as a 6. So, you know, the variance is wide, but in all likelihood, 6 is probably around the neighborhood, you know, you're looking at.
And you know, it's weird because, you know, you say they have these high level wins, but they aren't like a metrics darling per se. So why do you think that is, that, you know, on paper, right, it doesn't really show up? But as you would think with those kind of high level wins, I mean, they beat the number one team in the country, yes, at their place, but it's pretty impressive.
Yeah, right. So like, that's where it gets into that whole like resume versus predictives discussion. Cause actually there's WOB has them at 17, which is more like a 5 seed. There's another predictive metric that the committee uses. It's a KPI, the Kevin Paga Index. And I'm not going to like break all that down or whatever, but like, basically, hey, they're 15 there. Like if they went based off that, you're looking at a 4 seed. So like the resume is 4 or 5 seed range for North Carolina right now. It's where you get a KenPom ranking of 30th, which if you're 30th, that puts you at 8 seed, like in an 8 seed territory. But what the committee does is they're going to bake all that together. They're going to probably skew more towards resume, and then they're going to make final seeding determinations, maybe, and incorporate the predictives and the KenPoms into that to a certain extent. So, you know, why has North Carolina been unable to sort of juice KenPom to kind of get into that upper teens, lower 20s level? I don't know. I mean, it's on some level, it's just going to be due to your offensive and defensive efficiency, your slimmer margin of victory against some of the lower to mid-tier teams in the league. I mean, I know she has blown out some of the bad teams, which is kind of what you got to do to get the love from those metrics. But rest assured, your listeners, that the resume is key. It's key and it's king. When we were there at that mock selection exercise, it was pretty evident. And from a data perspective, we've been able to confirm over the years, and now with the top 16 that we saw on Saturday, that your resume is the most important thing. And quite frankly, I think North Carolina has a very strong resume.
So last question, V-Star and Wilson are out in the Miami loss, NC State loss. Are there metrics factoring that their two best players are in? So, you know, when you say the 3%, you know, hey, look, 3% of the bubble teams would have won this. Does that factor in, or is that something you guys just have to take into account and factor in yourselves?
No, that's a great question. So WOB does not actually factor in injuries. So it's tough, right? Because you're going to get the same WOB credit for beating Texas Tech without JT Toppin as you would for beating them with JT Toppin. We all know that's a totally different team without him, right? And you could say the same thing for North Carolina. Like, it's a great thing for NC State that, like, they're going to get the WOB credit for beating UNC. Well, I mean, we all know that wasn't the real UNC out there that night. So that is one of the flaws with wins above bubble. But that's where the human element of the committee really comes into play. And we had this JT Toppin debate at the mock exercise last week. And I was looking forward to the Caleb Wilson, Henry Vissar part of that discussion. We had to break and go get dinner, so we didn't get into that. But that's where the humans will evaluate North Carolina based on who they have available for the tournament. So all indications are Caleb Wilson will be back before Selection Sunday. And so in that sense, like, it should simplify the discussion. I don't think they'll get too hung up on how to handle the NC State loss. Like, on some level, that was a road loss against a quality team. Might have happened even if he had been healthy. Certainly, they would have had a better chance with them. But at that point, you're sort of splitting hairs. That's the problem, though, with these resume metrics. They're not gonna fully account for the injury picture. And so the selection committee, they have workarounds on that with the conference reports. Like, every committee member is responsible for sort of being aware of the key injury storylines in a handful of leagues. And so, you know, they do account for that in the committee room, but from a metric standpoint, it's harder to put a pulse on that.
Yeah. It's funny, 'cause you know, we can also game the committee too. Like, my year, we were numbered over our seed. My wrist was jacked up. I was playing on one arm. Now, it was a left, so I was like, okay, But had we come out and said, hey, look, he's 70%. He really, if it was regular season, he wouldn't be playing, but it is what it is. Do we still get the number one over our seed? I don't know. So that's my thing with the Caleb Wilson thing. Like, I mean, he may come back, but I mean, UNC is probably going to ride this thing to the wheels fall off. Oh, he'll be fine. He'll be fine. And he may not even come back. So it's a game within a game, man. We played it for sure. Even when Kimball got hurt, we knew he couldn't play, but we kind of held it close to chest until we had to say something. So
well, hold on. What year was that when your wrist was messed up?
2012.
Okay.
Yeah. It was 2012.
Oh my gosh, dude. That team was stacked. Yeah.
Yeah. Like we were fine. I mean, we got to the Elite Eight without our starting point guard, and we were six point game against Kansas with Tyshawn. I mean, Kansas and Jeff Witte. So I mean, we were really good. Like, if you know, so without Kendall. But I was also bad. I was hurt too. So really I was kind of half of myself. I couldn't really do much, with my other hand. So,
yeah, but it's interesting you bring that up. Cause that came up in the committee room too. Mm-hmm. Cause during the mock exercise, we had conference officials, we had NCAA officials, mm-hmm. we had a ton of media, like, and it was just open forum, ask questions. The whole point mm-hmm. of it was to learn and like be instructed on how the committee handles it. Mm-hmm. And like that same scenario you're discussing mm-hmm. came up where it's like, yo, do we really trust mm-hmm. all these teams to be forthright with information with information that could impact their seeding, right? And it's like that's all you can do though. Like that's all you can do is you know, trust that they're telling you the truth. So that's an interesting dynamic. And it's unfortunately there's a lot of injury situations right now. You look at Koa Pete at Arizona. He's been out for a minute now.
Caleb close Wilson's to vest. We don't know what's wrong with him. Lower egg. Like that's what's going. Like, you know, in the NBA, you have to like say, hey, look, mm-hmm. this is what's going on. I mean, like, there's a few injuries where you're like, well, what's wrong with, like, even the Darren Peterson injury. Like, everyone's talking, but no one's telling us what's going on.
Right. So, like, what do you do with that as the committee? Mm-hmm. Honestly, the easier ones for the committee are basically like, I mean, obviously very unfortunate, but like the top end thing, you can make sense of it because you get the before sample size, you get the after sample size, you know, he's not coming back.
Very true.
Same with Richie Saunders at BYU. You've got the before, you've got the after. All right. We know who they were before. We know who they are after. Right. But it's harder when you've got one, an injury like Cooper Flagg last year, he goes down in the ACC tournament. Is he coming back? How bad was it? We don't know. And we also really haven't seen them without him. So we are assuming they're going to be worse because he's a great player, but we don't know if he's coming back. We don't know how healthy he's going to be, right? Like, that's a real situation they got to work through. And that sorted itself out, obviously, because he was fine. But it is complicated. Well,
the first game, I was actually in studio in HQ, and the first game they said he's available. So Duke was so good because they kept saying he will be available, which – everyone was like, well, I guess. And you know, they got the seeding that they were going to get. They were number one seed. But, like, if they would have said, hey, look, he will be out the first game, maybe play the second, that may change some things.
Yeah. Yeah, especially if the margins are tight. Like, the example that kept getting invoked was Kenyon Martin. And this was obviously way back in the day now. Mm-hmm. But he got hurt, and my memory may fail me, but, like, he got hurt in the – title game of the conference tournament.
Yep.
So what do you do then? He's the best player. He's the best, one of the best players in America. And so the injuries are a tough thing for the committee. And I mean, hopefully, knock on wood, like, not a huge factor down the stretch. Everybody stays healthy, but like, we know the reality, which is that they will creep in. And that's what I think, that's where you're going to get some of your more interesting debates. Like, we had great debates in the mock thing last week in Indianapolis, and we were just like, media learning how it all worked, but we start yelling at each other about Miami of Ohio, and then you know Norlander and Goodman start screaming at each other about strength of schedule, and you know
I'm gonna talk to Jeff later. Jeff, man, you're yelling at Norlander and the comedian, man. Come on, Jeff, calm down.
Well actually, I'm team Goodman on this one because Matt took his role as the vice chair quite mm-hmm. seriously. He let everybody know what he thinks. Mm-hmm. So it was good to have Goodman in there to kind of clap back a little bit.
I like that. I like that. And then my last thing, just bigger picture, I personally think this is one of the years where maybe a 4, 5, 6 seed line could reach the Final Four, maybe more of a chance than it ever has been. Do you think this is one of the deeper fields we've ever seen? You have the history data, so.
And you could say that. I mean, you think about a UNC as a 6, like nobody wants to see that brand with that talent. If you're a 3 seed, you know, no thank you. You think about 2, like right now we got Florida as a 3, but they're knocking on the door of a 2, but
so good.
I mean, who wants to mess with Florida as a 3 seed, right? So like they would be, from a betting perspective, one of the favorites, you know, if they ended up as a 3. All right, looking at it, oh gosh, yeah, like Arkansas 5, like Darius Acuff gets on a heater, right? Yeah. Like, look out. We've seen what that guy can do. St. John's as a 6. You don't want to brush up against Rick Pitino in the NCAA tournament. So here's the way I see it. I see a clear separation among the top 3 teams in college basketball, right? Like, we can all see that. It's Duke, Michigan, Arizona, and they are head and shoulders above the pack right now. But where I think it gets interesting is that the 2 through 7, like, or 2 through the end of the 6th line, a lot of parity there. So like I see a clear separation at the top, a lot of parity 2 through 6, and then you sort of get to your, you know, your 7 through 10 range right now. So yeah, like I don't necessarily think we're gonna arrive at the Elite Eight with a bunch of 1-2 matchups. Like I could see a bunch of 6s, 5s, 4s hanging around, you know, into the second weekend. Because you do have some parity kind of there in the middle. So UNC is a part of that pack. St. John's pops out.
Yeah.
Arkansas pops out. I don't really love Alabama because they're trying to get Charles Bediako back because they have no size. But, you know, there's a handful in there too, like a Vandy. Kansas could be a 4 seed, a 5 seed, maybe a 3 seed if they close strong. This won't be a year, man. This won't be a year where we have 4 number 1 seeds in the final.
Yeah,
four.
That's what I was thinking.
It's not going to happen. Like, I know the top 3 are good enough, but whether it's UConn or Iowa State or Purdue or Houston, whoever ends up with that 4th number 1, like, we're really going to have to thread that needle to get 4 ones in the Final Four this year.
Yeah, I, when you talk about Florida, that's my team that I just have an eye on. You know, before I let you get out of here, it's just because they're so matchup driven. If you do not have the size and the strength and the length to handle that front line, you're going to lose. That's a scary, like a 3 seed, like Carolina may have to play them second. Like, you know, I'm praying that they don't, because to me, Florida has like a championship ceiling matchup wise. Now, once you get down to nitty gritty, you go against, you know, the Houstons and the Michigans and the Arizonas and the Dukes that have that size, even Carolina too, at some, you know, to in a sense, it's going to be interesting. So I want to thank you for coming. Hey, appreciate you taking the time. This has actually helped me so much just to understand kind of what's above bubble and the metrics and how serious everyone is taking this, especially at CBS. So appreciate that, man. And we'll talk soon.
All right. Yeah, man. Hit me up anytime. Happy to help.
Perfect. Thank you, man. As always, thanks for watching on YouTube and listening to wherever you get your podcast. Be sure to check out TarHill247.com for the latest wall-to-wall coverage of Carolina Athletics. See you next time.